Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Police of Montgomery County, Marcus Jones. Good morning.
Chief, are you there? Hey, how are you?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good. How's everybody?
Good morning.
Chief,
thank you for joining us.
You probably know we had a long relationship with your predecessor, Chief Manger.
Yes,
and
I do.
Just to kind of get to know you before we get into anything, you've been with the police for almost 35 years, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yep. Yes, I have. Yeah, long time.
With Montgomery County the whole time?
All with Montgomery County. Absolutely.
Wow.
Yes.
Now, did you work with Chief Manger, or did you sort of work underneath them side by side? How did that go?
So I worked underneath Chief Manger.
Yeah.
He was here for 15 years.
Right.
Which is for a chief of police, that's a great time, right? A long time.
Right.
So I worked under him in different ranks and different positions throughout those 15 years. And my final, just before he retired, I was an assistant chief under him, working the chief of detectives. So, great guy. And, we had a great run.
Chief, now, JP, what was your first beat in Montgomery County?
Germantown. And I worked at Germantown District, but I worked basically Gaithersburg around Montgomery Village in the 124 corridor, right? Yeah, yeah.
Where were
that,
you?
That was my first beat.
Man, you
Where
probably got some great stories.
Oh, yeah, he does.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Oh, man.
Where were you, Chief, during the sniper and all of that? What was your role?
Oh, wow. So that was an interesting story. So I was actually working in Bethesda during the sniper when it first started.
Right.
And I was working in the Bethesda district, and lots of that happened really right in the Bethesda district right from the beginning.
Connecticut Avenue, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And so, but in the middle of that, I worked quite a few years throughout my career in narcotics, but I was being transferred in the middle of the sniper investigation as a sergeant in the narcotics unit. But of course, and I was transferred during that time, but I actually, we were all assigned to the sniper detail. So I was actually on surveillance on the night the snipers were captured.
Wow.
Yeah, we were doing surveillance in the county. Yeah. So
were you close to the spot where they were captured at the rest stop, or were you back in the county somewhere?
I was still in the county, yeah. Lots of things were happening right around the time they were actually spotted. What happened was we sent a SWAT team up to the truck stop up in the rest area up in Frederick County. So I wasn't engaged in that part. But it was an interesting time. It was an interesting time.
Chief Jones, I wanted to ask you about something which I think doesn't get highlighted as much as the press seems to focus on the looting and the rioting. There have been peaceful protests here in Germantown. And yesterday, I live in Crown Farm, in the Crown Farm community.
Oh, yeah.
And they went right through my neighborhood and down Fields Road. I think the protests, at least in Montgomery County, have been peaceful, correct?
They have thus far, and we've been grateful for that. The all of the folks that have been participating have been very peaceful protesters, and we've given them, you know, given them their opportunity to say their piece. And you know, they've been, you know, in the, you know, basically traveling around the different areas. I mean, when they were in Germantown and in Gaithersburg, they were walking down streets and, you know, walking through some intersections. But they were all, you know, everything was well. Everybody was well behaved, and we were much appreciative to that. So for that fact, we're, you know, things have been relatively quiet. We did have some folks that thought that they wanted to come up to the Friendship Heights area the other night, on Sunday night, to do some looting right at the D.C. line. And we were ready for them, and we basically prevented them from coming over into Friendship Heights on our side. They did actually break into some stores in D.C., but D.C. police came on board pretty quickly to try to root that out. So, but that's the most we've had as far as anything considered. That has anything to do with looting. That was the only thing that was even close to it. So,
what are the exact tactics? What are the tactics that you instruct your guys to, or that they're trained to do if you know that their only purpose is to loot?
Right.
And what do you guys tell them?
Yes. So what we do is what we have is we have what they call a special events response team. And these are some of the most well-trained officers that are trained into dealing with rioters and, you know, protests. So we utilize them as the front line. And we basically tell them, you know, basically when we're looking at just protecting property as well as life, is that we utilize tactics to try to maintain the safety and, you know, to protect the line, you might say. And we'll have other officers that are also backing them up. In fact, what folks don't know is the fact that that CERT team was actually instrumental in the Baltimore riots in 2015. They were on the very front line at the Baltimore riots for several days. So they are they're well trained. Hope is always to maybe just by being a deterrent that we don't have to have these confrontations. And that's our hope, you know, as we continue through this crisis that we're going through now.
Chief, what do you say to, we had some guys call in and they say part of their frustration is they feel like certain groups are allowed to protest peacefully and they're allowed to gather, but then other groups protest. And this didn't happen in Montgomery County, but, you know, they might have rubber bullets fired at them or tear gas to make them disperse.
Right.
And they feel like they've been unjustly sort of targeted. What do you say to people like that? What's the solution? What should be the proper approach?
Well, what happens in many of these different protests is protests when you have individuals that when it comes time that police are actually deploying those types of ammunition, such as rubber bullets or actually gas. What's happening is we're not being on the proactive side of trying to move people away. That's generally due to the result of rocks being thrown, bottles being thrown, and folks within those crowds are being disorderly. I think what happens a lot of times is that folks who are there peacefully get caught up in where individuals who are causing a ruckus begin to create a little bit of that violence towards the police. And so in order for us to try to maintain order, therefore we have to try to use tactics to try to move people back. We try to order them back. Our goal is to order them back so that they actually move on their own. But, you know, when individuals don't adhere to the order, then these tactics have to be utilized in order to try to maintain order.
Talking to Chief Marcus Jones, the Chief of Police in Montgomery County, I've seen some of your quotes, and you talked about being frustrated. I just want to let you allow to go further into what frustrates you about this entire incident in the last week.
So, yeah, and I think thanks for letting me do that. So what frustrates me is the fact that you had an incident with an individual, and you had multiple officers. They have four officers who were controlling or attempting to control one individual. And based upon what I saw in the video, they had the individual under control. What I did not like and what frustrated me was the fact that, A, you had an officer that literally had his knee on an individual's neck, which is not what we teach. Again, and that's, again, you, there are 18,000 police departments in this country, right? But and all the departments have policies, but, you know, we try in the profession to try to follow best practices when we use different types of defensive tactics. But that being one of them is not one that, for example, Montgomery County or any other department that I know, particularly in this region, that we utilize in many departments across the country. But the reality is that the officer had his knee on the neck for a very long time. That's another part. And then when an individual started to say that I can't breathe, the officer basically just ignored what he said. And so that just, I mean, it just, I was at a boiling point because we have in our policy that if you have an individual who begins to have difficulty breathing and you have them in a certain position, you are supposed to roll him over and provide him with an opportunity to breathe in a better position. And so that is what I saw, that there was just no action on that officer's part or anybody there saying anything different to that officer to get them to change the position of that individual as he was struggling and to get him proper medical assistance in a timely manner. So that's what just boiled me to the point that that's not what we are in policing. That's not representative of us. And we just can't, it's not even a black eye. I mean, it's just, that's worse than anything that we could ever do to a human being. And that's where I'm just totally frustrated in that regard for that case.
Now, Chief, we talked about that too, and we couldn't believe that the cop would do that. I mean, he's obviously a bad person, evil person, but, and I know it's right. it's hard to get into the heads of the other three officers who were on the scene, but is that standard when there's an officer, maybe he's more of a senior officer, those other guys looked like they were younger, just to kind of defer to that guy, or do they? Is that what they were trained to do? I don't get it. Why wouldn't one of those officers say, "Hey, dude, you got to get off of him"?
Right, right, and that's a great question. You know, the culture, I will say, and then again, having been around for three decades, the culture has, you know, was that you kind of like deferred to the senior officer on any given scene, and that senior officer sort of ran the show, and nobody was to tell the senior officer any different. We've changed that. We've not allowed that to continue to be the process, particularly when we see officers doing something that's we would consider violating our policy or misconduct. So I don't care what the rank of that individual is. I don't care what how young an officer is that is assisting. You know, it is your responsibility and your duty to do something about that and not to allow that to continue when you see that someone is struggling and assist your fellow officer and maybe even remove that officer from that situation. We're trying to implement policy to try to make sure that that happens. And I'm going to do everything in my power to make sure that that is something that we have a policy here in Montgomery County. But that is just, again, to me, that's just a basic human thing that we all should be, that should be embedded in all of us, to not allow that type of behavior to go forward.
Talking to Chief Marcus Jones, who's the new chief of police in Montgomery County. I wanted to ask you about what's kind of beneath the surface. Sure, the George Floyd incident was the catalyst to all these protests, but you can speak as an African-American man. You are in police, but I'm sure you have family members. We've had a lot of people who have talked about incidents with the police, driving while black, those type of things. What are your feelings from that side of things?
Yeah. So I will tell you, and you're absolutely right. I have a son who's, you know, now 30 years old, but I have always had those concerns as any other African-American parent, having grown up myself, I grew up in the South, but again, it doesn't really matter. I mean, no matter as we drive and we move about dealing with policing. And this is something I've been talking about since I've been a police officer for many years. This is not new. And I know the African-American community has always had serious concerns about police involvement, what to do when stopped by police. You know, they've had those concerns that they're going to be treated differently. And I've been, you know, really working throughout different parts of this community trying to assist people with the understanding of what you should do when you're stopped by the police and what are the expectations, what are police officers looking for, how do you make the situation much calmer, not to, you know, not only am I doing it from the public side, but I'm also doing it with our police officers so they are not escalating situations that create these moments that, you know, again, because, you know, people have a fear sometimes because of history, of what they've heard about. It may not necessarily that they've had those exact incidents happen to them before, but, you know, when you have, you know, family members talking about certain interactions that they've had with police, and that makes them nervous. I always tell the story about when my wife, when we were just getting married, and I was telling her I was going to be a police officer. She's from Chicago, and she was very fearful of the police, and she, you know, she looked at me like I was crazy when I told her I was going to join the police department because she had had some bad experiences. But again, it's about an education. And as my wife, throughout these years have, you know, been involved in policing through her husband, she has learned and understood, not only, the good side of policing, and though she's seen the bad side, right? With some of these traffic stops have gone bad throughout history, and that's a reality. So we as the police cannot ignore that. This is history. We have to do better. We have to bring our folks in, and they have to have an understanding and understand why people feel the way they do, even though it may, you know, in the case I tell our officers, it's not about them accusing you as the individual, for example, an accusation that might let say that you're racist, but it might be just because of the institution of the or it's because of the uniform that you wear. And so you got to not take those things personally, but you have to treat people with the respect that they deserve. And when you get through that, generally those interactions become much better when you treat everyone the same way, no matter who you stop.
Chief, I wanted to ask you what the protocol is for accepting the National Guard or the military. When Trump and the White House say we're going to send out our troops, now I understand that's probably more to the bigger cities where there's more people, right? But do you have to accept them as the chief in that county, or can you tell the White House, no, we're good, I got this?
Yeah, I mean, I have to work with not only myself and other law enforcement, but also governmental officials, such as the governor and the county executive. And I will tell you, you know, I don't see exactly how that's a function of the military coming in, you know, dealing with arresting people because they're not a part of the criminal justice system. So technically, I would be saying, no, we don't need that assistance because I don't see how that's going to work based upon what the president has noted. Now, the National Guard is different. The National Guard has always provided us some support in certain instances. You know, in Maryland, for example, and when we had the Baltimore riots, they were instrumental in supporting. And you know, we've utilized them in other different types of emergencies. But they have a specific role. It may not necessarily be a powers of arrest, but they have a different role to support and a show of force in some of those cases. So, yeah, I definitely think that this thing with the president, how interesting it is, I'm not sure how that would even flow throughout different parts of the United States. I think there's some conflicts there. But, you know, again, you know, there could be some other support the military could provide, but I'm not so inclined to say that they can support it in such a way to come out and actually dealing with protesters and make an arrest from that perspective.
Chief, this is very informative for us, but we're up against a break. Can you come back for one more segment?
I can.
Are you willing to do that?
I can do that.
I need to ask him about the ICC speed limit, to be quite honest. I know that's entirely different. But the ICC is 60? What the heck's going on there?
Yeah. Hey, it used to be 55.
Okay. All right, you can have a talk. Yes.
Chief, stay on hold, please. We want to do another segment with you. All right, great.
But he's great, by the way. He's awesome.
He's awesome. Very good. Yeah,
Chief Marcus Jones. We'll come back with more with him right here on the Junkies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back. Chunky's on 106.7 The Fan. We are live on NBC Sports Washington. Happy to be joined by the Chief of Police in Montgomery County, Marcus Jones. Three of the Junkies live in Montgomery County, Chief.
That's right.
In Gaithersburg, yes, Crown Farm. Cakes is an only guy, and EB's in Kensington.
That's right. The great K-Town.
Outstanding.
And before we get serious again, I do want to ask you about the ICC. The ICC is wide open most of the times.
Mm-hmm.
It's 60 miles an hour wide. It should at least be 65.
that's it's been debated, right? I mean, there's a lot of talk about, yes, you know, there's probably some allowance for it to be 65. I don't know there was talk of a couple of years ago about changing it. I don't know where that lies right now. So we'd have to maybe dig into that a little bit to see, is there an ability for us to increase the speed limit there on the ICC? And, of course, that would have to be done by the state legislature.
Chief, we've seen videos lately, and I live in Olney, so I hear this on almost a daily basis. And it's a serious problem is the guys on motorcycles going 100-plus miles per hour on the
crazy
ICC. Yes. Like, it's a health safety hazard. You guys can't really give chase, though, it seems like, because those guys are going at such extreme speeds.
Right.
How do you handle
that? Did you ever catch those guys that were caught on video?
No, I don't think so. So it is a challenge. And you know, first of all, Maryland Transportation Authority, they have primary jurisdiction over the ICC. And you probably see them from time to time sitting there monitoring the speeds on the ICC. We'll patrol that from time to time. But that's not our primary responsibility. And it does present some hazards, because when you're actually trying to pursue vehicles at that rate of speed, and particularly motorcycles, it's just a really dangerous thing, because one of the things that we are fearful of, that's, you know, from our perspective, is the fact that we don't want to endanger, you know, innocent drivers when we're trying to pursue these drivers that are dodging in and out of traffic at these high rates. So there's some strategies that we'll work with state police and the transportation authority in order to try to identify some of these bikers we'll do some monitoring, that once they get to a point that they slow down at some point in time, that we'll try to figure out ways to try to get them at that point, but not to get, just sort of engage them during this so-called pursuit. And we don't pursue people who are fleeing from us for just traffic. It has to be for a serious criminal offense or even suspected drunk driving. We have to have some limitations on that. So, it is really tough for us. And I've been hearing more and more about what you guys are talking about, the complaints. And I'm talking to my traffic director now. So we can start working on some strategies to try to deal with that.
Chief, let's get back to the issue that is making the country crazy right now. You touched on it before, and that's been something that we've touched on this week, too, is just that it's not new, right? That this issue
right.
pops up occasionally, and for some, they say way more than occasionally. It happens all the time, these kinds of things, but pulled over improperly, that sort of thing. You've been a lifelong guy in the police department. You know, what are some of the solutions? I mean, do you see a systemic problem within police departments across the country? How do we fix this? How do we go from here? I just want to get your sort of perspective, because that's what's so frustrating to, I think, all of us, the fact that we can't just make this stop.
Yeah. So, again, I think that they're systematically across the different departments. Policies that are implemented for how you deal with discipline, how you address complaints that come in. And I will tell you, I think what has changed, I know, for in Montgomery County that has helped us with dealing with some issues is the body-worn camera. So now all of our patrol officers are outfitted with body-worn cameras. As they patrol the streets every day, and when they make traffic stops, they have to activate their cameras. When they go on all calls for service, they are required to activate their cameras. So when we get complaints, we are able to then view the body-worn camera to actually get a visual of exactly what occurred, so that we can, you know, properly assess that situation. We also, like all our use of force cases, are reviewed by executive officers and supervisors on each occasion that you utilize use of force. You have to document it, first of all, on a form and turn that in. And then we then go to the body-worn camera to see if the force that was used was warranted in that particular situation. And if we see, and we have seen, cases that we think go beyond what's allowed in our policy, then we have actually brought those officers in and worked through the disciplinary process to actually, address that situation. And in some cases that has warranted in officers being dismissed or that they resign, depending upon the situation. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we take that very seriously, and I definitely take it seriously. That I want to make sure, and I hold my executives accountable to make sure that they are viewing it properly and the assessments are done properly based upon our training and what our expectations are. And so it, you know, it can be twofold. It can be via a citizen complaint, but then sometimes it can be self-initiated by us for us to deal with this. And this is what I think that all police departments are really going to have to go to across this country, because everybody doesn't have body-worn cameras. I think that there have been some departments that have been resistant to this. And I think in order to earn the trust of the community, this is a way for you to be able to help to address some of those situations that you've been dealing with.
So, Chief, the media reported that this particular officer in Minnesota had 18 prior complaints. Now, I know you're not up there, so you probably aren't familiar with all the complaints. But when, you know, a lot of listeners are saying, well, how can a guy who has 18 complaints still be working?
Is that common?
Can you explain that? And what is the disciplinary process for a guy with that many, you know, let's call them infractions?
Yeah. So to me, I don't think that's common. I don't know of any officer in my department that has 18 complaints. I will tell you that. The problem lies sometimes about what type of complaints are they. Are they very serious complaints such as brutality? Are they basically like courtesy complaints? Are they, you know, a combination of all of that, right? And what we have is what we call an early warning system, so that we have the ability to monitor our officers' behavior. And when we see a particular officer who is getting multiple complaints in a very short period of time, then we have avenues to address that. There have been cases where I've actually even removed an officer from his or her responsibility taking them out of their position while we are pursuing administrative charges against them for violations of the policy due to that complaint. That's being proactive, and that's what we have to do as we move, you know, in order to hold people accountable. So there's no, you know, so, again, it's vitally important when you're doing these internal reviews that you're actually treating the officers fair. When you're going through these processes of charging them with certain violations, and that you are looking at some remedies as to why is this officer, committing these different types of violations? What's going on in that particular officer's personal life? There could be a lot of things happening that we're not aware of that we need to be aware of that impacts that officers. And we can't allow those folks to be on our front lines and end up in a situation like Minneapolis.
Right. Chief Jones, it's been a pleasure having you on. I'm going to formally invite you now to our annual drinking show. Chief Manger was part of that.
Uh-oh.
Now, the drinking show.
You won't be drinking. Don't worry.
We're highlighting.
Okay, all right.
You can if you dare.
All right. You can if you want.
We highlight responsibility. We arrange drivers.
Right.
It's a public service.
Involved there. It's a public service.
We're public servants.
And the benefit is the Palm usually brings us food, so you'll get a great meal out of that, Chief Jones.
Well, then I'm all in then. Let's do it. I look forward to that day. Okay.
Thank you, Chief. Appreciate it.
Thank you for the time.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me. Okay.
Thank you, Chief.
Thanks for the time.
Very much appreciate it.
Two-segmenter with the Chief.
Yeah, that's great. I think it's important. I think it's important to get his perspective.
Definitely.
All right, phone lines are open at 800.
And, of course, we are the greatest interviewers in the country.
1067. We do our best. All right, let's take a break. If you want to chime in, you can at 800-636-1067. We're the Junkies. Coming right back.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Breaking sports news on Sports Radio 106.7 The Fan.
One of the greatest Washington Bullets of all time has passed away. Wesley Unseld, at the age of 74, obviously a huge part of the Bullets championship team in 1970. 8-5-time NBA All-Star and, of course, Rookie of the Year and MVP in 1969. Unseld, who had been in some poor health of late, passing away at the age of 74. The announcement made by his family, of course, not only a player for the Wizards or Bullets franchise, but obviously coached them and was part of the front office as well. And after his playing career in 1979, he and his wife Connie opened up the Unseld School, which is a private school in the city of Baltimore to help the youth there. Wes Unseld passing away at the age of 74. More details throughout the day right here on Sports Radio 106.7 The Fan.
Thanks, Pete. So some tragic news there about Wes Unseld, who we grew up with watching him towards the tail end of his career. I can remember Wes Unseld playing and then, of course, as an executive for the Bullets. He was the vice president for a while. Then he became the head coach. Not a glorious run as a head coach, but
no,
he was a head coach at a time where there weren't that many African-American head coaches.
But I think I started watching the Bullets / Wizards too late to appreciate his greatness. I mean, he was a finals MVP, 5-time All-Star. He was the Rookie of the Year and MVP in the same year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was
69,
you know, part of the 50th anniversary all-time team. I mean, he's a legend, especially here.
I'm trying to think.
Averaged 15 rebounds a game for his career.
He was an absolute monster of a player and a legend and a Hall of Famer. And, I know A. Poland just loved him, right?
Mm-hmm.
They were
absolutely
best friends. They just had so much respect for him. And I know that Wizards fans slash Bullets fans loved him. He was private, though. You know, I'm thinking of all the years that he was in town. I'm not sure we interviewed him more than a couple times.
Pretty quiet guy.
You know?
Yeah.
A couple times. In 25 years of doing this, I think maybe we interviewed him once or twice on the radio.
I don't even remember those interviews.
I think on the phone and maybe just had a passing interaction with him at times, you know, at the arena. Yeah.
Because he was done with his coaching career. Now, he may have been a GM for a little while we started doing the show, but it really didn't overlap.
Yeah, yeah.
What was his last year as coach?
Well, became the GM in 96. His last year coaching was 94.
He was 94, GM when we started. You know, yeah, I think when we started, Jimmy Lynham was still the coach, and John Nash was the GM.
Yep.
If you remember that.
87 to 94, yep.
When we were doing cable access.
And those were some lean Bullets years.
Yeah, they weren't great years.
I was still a hardcore fan.
Oh, yeah, of course you were fans. But, I mean, from 88 until 94, they missed the playoffs every single season.
Hey, there was a lot of hope when you had Googs and Don McLean.
Calbert Chaney. So much of that. LeBradford Smith.
By the way, fellas, tonight, speaking of local hoops, at 7 o'clock,
Bias thing.
The right? Bias thing. Remembering Len Bias. That's going to be a Sports Center special. And then they're going to replay the 1986 game at North Carolina that went to overtime. Maryland won that game. That's the game where he had the he stole the inbounds pass and had the reverse jam.
Mm-hmm.
Great game. And then at 10 o'clock, they're going to run the 30 for 30 without Bias. So this is honoring Len Bias. Did he die on June 2nd? I guess he did.
Just a few days after the draft, yeah, maybe that's what it coincides with. Yeah.
And also, Pete's hit this a couple times during his updates. This is huge news, is that the Navy-Notre Dame game that originally was going to be scheduled in Dublin is now being moved to Annapolis. And I don't believe they've ever played Annapolis. Because usually when they play in Maryland, they play in Baltimore. But
Pedro can let us know. He is the Navy historian.
Have they ever played Annapolis? I don't think they have.
Never played in Annapolis. First time they'll play.
That's huge.
Well, that's Annapolis coming up here.
Now what sucks is, and Pedro and I were texting during the break, is they're probably only going to have about 10,000 fans of that game.
I mean, I think the bigger thing is will there be any fans in any games early in the season?
What's the date that they have?
Scheduled for August 29th. It's supposed to be the season opener.
Yeah.
But they might move it to Labor Day. That's what I read.
Bias apparently died on June 19th.
I wonder why they're doing it on June 2nd.
I know that Pedro will be there.
Programming, brother.
Pedro will be at Navy Notre Dame. I know he will be there.
Hopefully I'm not calling it off of a monitor or something like that.
We can only hope.
I know we've talked about this before in terms of sports networks looking for programming. I mean, I've seen a lot as I just flip through the stations of cornhole. It's unbelievable.
I think they're all playing with masks.
I've seen it, but I would never watch it.
I don't understand. Cakes and I talked about this a few weeks ago. Why are they not putting some more of these online high-stakes battles, poker battles,
on TV?
Why are they not putting Phil Galfond heads up against Action Freak? Why is that not on?
I would watch it. I would watch it in a heartbeat.
I mean, I know he's got a long-standing match with Bill Perkins. That may not be as interesting. But, you know, why are they not doing that, Cakes?
I don't have the answer for that, EB. I wish I did.
They're going to put the rock thing where you skip rocks on water on the Ocho. Why aren't they going to have some online poker that we can watch?
I don't know.
Did they legitimately air guys skipping rocks?
Oh, yeah. That was part of the whole Ocho thing, which, by the way, I didn't get. I didn't know the reference, the Ocho. But they had rock skipping. They had, I think, darts might have been part of it. You know, just a variety of just random things.
You should watch Dodgeball today, EB. It's pretty funny. Ben Stiller, Vince Vaughn.
It's not a bad movie.
A lot of yucks.
And that's where it stems from, right?
That's a stupid movie.
Oh, it's stupid.
Like, yeah.
It clearly should make you laugh
when the guy throws the wrench at the guys.
Yeah, right? Patches O'Houlihan. If you can't laugh at him, you have no soul.
Patches.
I think despite the bad reviews and despite a lukewarm endorsement, I'm going to give Space Force a shot because I'm watching too much heavy stuff. Like I said, I tend to watch probably 2 hours of the cable news in the evening, and I'll watch a little bit during the day and obviously follow along online, but just need an escape. and I don't really have any shows right now. So I
well,
might
you're
give
probably going to be disappointed because
probably
it was panned, I'm sure, for a reason.
Yeah, but I do like Steve Carell, and it's I've seen a trailer that looked decent. I'm not going to say good, but
it is a comedy, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. All right.
By the way, I'm just so disappointed that Drab didn't give me props. I don't expect you guys to, but my camera crashed in the middle of the show yesterday.
Okay.
And I troubleshooted that sucker for like 3 hours. I had two Nikon reps. I had a Sony rep.
Trouble bricked.
And I was just trying to figure this out, and I tried different cameras, I tried different lenses, I tried different cables, and I figured it out myself, Cakes. This thing right here, this little adapter was the problem. I got rid of this adapter.
Yeah.
Used a different cable. Boom, back to my silly picture.
Figured it out.
And nobody's giving me props.
Hey, did you give me props for correcting my internet by moving one wire?
No, I mean, didn't really notice it. But this is noticeable. I mean, look how good my picture is.
So needy.
I just want props. Hours.
How would we know?
Yeah, look at my picture. Look how good my picture is.
Was I supposed to wake up, look at your picture, and go, I bet he'd be probably troubleshot for hours with a couple of Nikon reps.
You in 1080p or something silly?
I actually am.
Hey, I'm needy.
I didn't even notice that it broke yesterday.
Cakes,
you can see the umbrella. It was
Cakes
a totally different picture.
Cakes laptops during the show. He didn't need like all this
and
verbal
I noticed.
Pat on the back.
I'm a new cam boy. I've got a $40 cam.
It just goes to show how much we're paying attention.
Nobody pays attention. I don't even know.
We had the same hat on for two shows, and you didn't even know.
I don't know. I know, but still, I expected Drabby to at least notice.
Not at all, Richie.
Nobody cares.
I know.
Just go out and go shoot your 94 today. You'll be fine.
I know. Believe me, that would be a good score.
Yeah, we need an update tomorrow.
No,
I did on the
faux
Amen Corner.
I'll give you an update on Amen Corner and Sawgrass.
Hey, send me a picture of your bag with your clubs in it.
Okay.
Text it to me.
I don't keep my clubs silly, though. Like, I scuff them, and then I just throw them
back
in the
bag. You just got them. They should be brand new.
Yeah, I know, but pristine. I'm not like Squirrel, where I, like, wipe them down and clean out the grooves.
You don't wipe your clubs down after you play?
No, I don't have time for that.
Oh, that's perfect.
You know what I do? I'll dip them in the water.
I usually have the cart boy do that.
You have time. Trust me, you have time.
We all have time. For Bush, Cake, CB, I'm JP. We'll see you tomorrow. Grandaddy, they're coming up next, right here on The Fan.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.